Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event with your hosts, Tyler from TB Scouting MMA and
Guru Scouting MMA, back again for UFC Vegas 33 or UFC on ESPN 28, Hall versus Strickland. This middleweight main event is sure to be an interesting one, as the winner of this fight puts themselves in a prime position to really start climbing the top 10, even the top five, possibly, you know, prime themselves for a top five matchup. So a lot on the line here in this main event. The card itself has been kind of moved around a bit with injuries and visa issues, just a lot of different weird things for this card. So we have Kyung Ho Kang in the co-main event versus Rani Yahya. Sure to be an interesting fight. Guys that have been in the UFC for a while, but might not have the name recognition at this point. But, you know, those diehards are definitely going to know them.
Yeah, I mean, I find myself still excited for this event. I know it's not the biggest in names, but the best part about the UFC is that we keep it moving. There's generally an event every weekend, and it keeps you sharp because there's always, you know, ways to learn, ways to move forward. So a lot of these fights, although I may not have the strongest of plays, I feel like there are a lot of young people, a lot of people off of Dana White's Contender Series, and there's a lot that we can learn from this card. So it's going to be enjoyable no matter
what. I couldn't agree more. And I just want to give a quick shout out to one of the fights I'm really most excited for on the entire card, which is these young guys, Trevin Jones and Ronnie Lawrence. Two really exciting young fighters, and I can't wait to watch their fight.
And I'm sorry, how do they have that so far buried down on the card? I mean, we're talking about the second fight of the night. You couldn't even make that the first one to kick us off. I mean, sheesh. I mean, what, talk about horrible placement for, you're right. I mean, probably the fight I'm most excited for here. So it won't take us long to get to that one. As I said, that's the second fight of the night. So Why don't we go ahead and kick it off with the first fight? We have, like I said, a couple of Dana White Contender Series guys here. Philip Rowe versus Orion Cosi. We already saw Orion's brother Luis make his debut, so now we see Cosi come in for his. The things that really stand out on paper, Philip Rowe going to be 4 inches taller and 9 inches reach advantage. So just right off the bat, there's some huge physical advantages, and you know, you see Philip Rowe out of Fusion Excel. You know, he's training with some great grapplers, Jacare, Rodolfo Vieira, and Cosi. Solid cardio, solid wrestling, but man, I think it's going to be tough for the, you know, the debutante here against Philip Rowe. And you know, it seems like the line is oddly priced just given, you know, Rowe's last performance. But plus 130 for Rowe and Cosi minus 150. Are you seeing a play here?
I actually do, but it's definitely not on the side that you seem to have one. While Rowe does have the physical advantages with the I believe 9 inches in reach, which is kind of crazy. Cosi, in his at least two out of his last three fights, he's been at a multiple inch reach disadvantage. So he is no stranger to this. That being said, it hasn't been 9 inches, but he has been at a disadvantage. From what I've seen from Rowe, he looks really green to me. And not just because he got pounded by Gabe Green in his last fight. When I saw him on Island Fights, I didn't really like too much of what I saw. I mean, he does have a ton of physical attributes that, like his reach that you could like. He's good off of his back. He does like to grapple. He feels quite comfortable, you know, throwing his kicks. He was rocked a lot in that Gabe Green fight. He was totally unable to utilize his reach advantage in that fight. Which was extremely sloppy with Gabe Green. He got really compromised with the leg kicks. What I did see from Cosi was that he did get wrestled a decent amount by Dixon, Matt Dixon, in his UFC Dana White Contender Series fight. But Dixon is like an unbelievable prospect. Had come into that fight 9-0 and was the significant favorite in that fight. He only gave up 3 of the 10 takedowns that the dude shot. And after kind of really pushing hard, Dixon did in round one, he started to wane in 2 and 3, and Kosi was able to weather that storm and was actually able to get the finish late in round 3. So when, you know, while I do think that Kosi's fight IQ could be kind of questionable, I think Rose kind of is too. And I think Rose is going to come out there and try to put a pace on in round one. And then when he doesn't get the finish, I see him fading. And I think Kosi could end up doing kind of what he did on the Contender Series. So I actually like Kosi here. There's a couple different ways I was thinking of splitting this baby. I like Kosi in the over 1.5 at +150. I also like, I guess, Kosi in round 3 or decision +200. And I don't know, if you didn't like the finish, you could just get Kosi by decision at +330. But I'm taking a fade at Roe, obviously.
Yeah, I really don't have like a play on this fight at all. I just lean towards picking Roe, that he does have that one UFC fight under his belt, and Kosi really benefited from a gassed opponent, and he's coming off this really strange shoulder injury where they kind of told him he needed surgery and needed to stop working out, but instead he just kind of did his own thing and like came back from it.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah,
no. So I had no idea about a shoulder injury.
Shout out to Fight Night Picks for the interview, because it was definitely interesting to hear that this guy is like going against his doctor's orders and just doing whatever he wants. And like, you know, I thought he did great on the Contender Series, really turning it around on a guy that was, you know, going for a first round finish, but really like, you know, he dominated the first round, and Kosi gets back to his corner and he goes, all right, well, I can't give up the takedown anymore because I'm not doing anything from the bottom. And I got to give it to him. He made good adjustments. So it's like I said, I mean, I feel like this fight should be closer to a 50-50 pick'em line. And, you know, that's why, like, at the current price, if I had to do something, I'll lean Roe. But I'm just not going to touch this fight because, like I said, there's a lot to learn here.
Yeah, so. I certainly agree. I'm willing to take a stab.
Yeah. So let's get on to the good one here. We got Ronnie Lawrence -150, Trevin Jones +130. I'm super excited to see... You know, we got the Dana White Contender Series graduate in Lawrence versus Trevin Jones, who came in on a short notice call-up, takes an absolute beating round one against Timur Valiyev and turns the table and knocks him out clean before Valiyev, you know, comes to his senses as he hits the ground. Some ground and pound follows. But, I mean, that's a clean finish there. And a little marijuana overturned it. I mean, come on. We love the cannabis on this show. So it's like it's horrible that they would go and suspend, you know, take away a win, turn it to a no contest. So that's still a win in our mind.
Yeah, I mean, and that win has just aged better and better, honestly, because Valiyev is a legitimate prospect.
Yeah, and to be hurt to the body that often and show the resilience to keep fighting, you know, Tognoni might have been able to stop it at some point, but generally when someone gets hurt to the body, I feel like they get a little bit more leeway with it, as far as like, you know, because you can recover in a short period of time when that happens, as Jones showed us. So I trust his cardio. I trust that he comes in the best shape possible because he did that on short notice. And then he comes in, we're picking him against him again. Bautista, a big favorite, and he gets knocked out in round two on a beautiful counter. Uppercut, lead hand. So it's really interesting because Trevin Jones, he's got his black belt in jiu-jitsu with Drysdale. He's been to Vita BJJ. He's been to Extreme Couture. So he's definitely been around the block. Now, in our minds, 2-0 in the UFC, really 1-0 with a 1-0 contest. He does have 6 losses, but one submission pretty long time ago, 5 decisions, and a lot of those decisions were splits. So, you know, Jones definitely has been, you know, been deep in fights, been able to, you know, win 6 decisions himself. A few of those split as well. So, you know, he has 3 knockouts, 4 submissions. And yeah, I mean, Ronnie Lawrence here seems to be a great, exciting fighter. Tons of cardio, tons of takedowns, but not a lot of top control. Are you seeing anything here as far as a pick?
I think that's super interesting in terms of the top control that you mentioned. I guess if I had to pick a side, I do lean Ronnie Lawrence at this point, because I mean, what we've seen from him, like Dana White said, he looks really special. Solid wrestling, aggressive in guard, decent striking, head movement, quick cardio. I mean, he really does seem to be the right, like the baseball, the five tool player. Like, he really seems to have everything that you'd be looking for in a fighter. He had a great showing against Vince Cachero, you know, continued to grind him out and really earn that finish. Took a while to get there, obviously, getting it in the third round, but he did get it. What I've liked from Trevin Jones is, I mean, obviously that he's a savage. I mean, he's won his two fights in a row, both by knockout and both as, you know, significant underdogs. So, I mean, really, it's really hard not to like this guy. Now he's coming into a third fight as an underdog. I'm not sure that he can spring it here. And the reason why is he hasn't even faced a takedown attempt in the UFC yet. So nobody on the UFC level, so to speak, has tried to even take him down. And that's a problem because I know that Ronnie Lawrence is going to shoot a million takedowns and he's going to be successful with a few of them. So, and I also know he's going to have the cardio to keep coming. I do like Lawrence, and at minus 150, you could even possibly, I do like it money line, but I think my play to kind of avoid some craziness, because the fight is damn close, I think the fight goes the distance. So you can get the fight to go the distance at plus 100. I think both of these guys, especially, I wanted to bring this up as well. What you really saw from Trevin Jones, especially after his with his interview after his second fight, I mean, the way that he strategically broke down his KO of Batista, I mean, it was it demonstrated an extremely high level of fight IQ. So I did want to make sure that comes out. So I think somewhere with the wrestling and the fight IQ, this fight goes a distance.
That's interesting. So here we are on opposite sides. I was looking into some of, the statistics and what, Trevin Jones has been doing so far in the UFC. Obviously, it's a super small sample size, but I'm watching the Bautista fight and I see Jones going, changing levels and getting into the clinch and getting some cage control. I mean, he ends up with a minute and a half of cage control in less than 2 rounds on Mario Bautista. So he's able to work things offensively. You know, he wasn't able to land a takedown there, but
He's a
against
kick.
Timur
Batista's a
Valiyev.
kickboxer, though, no? Like, that's
Right,
kind of.
right. But then
And then he also lost.
against
I also believe he lost the round, right? Jones did? Or did he win it?
I
I
mean,
don't.
the striking, I was actually going to get into that. The striking, as far as it went in the first round, Trevin Jones landed 16 of 21 and had a minute and a half of control, whereas Bautista landed 18 of 34. So, like, Jones is landing at a 76% clip in the first round, where Bautista is at 52%, and they're landing an equal amount of strikes essentially. So I thought it was super interesting. I mean, Jones lands a lot of leg kicks, so that definitely helps as far as percentages go. But I mean, they're landing the same amount from distance, and Jones is throwing way less. So he is a counter guy. I think that Lawrence is going to obviously be on the offensive here, but I do not like that Lawrence throws a lot of spinning shit. And I don't like that he relies on the takedown the second he gets stung, because if he does that against Jones here, it's not outside of the possibility that he gets submitted, just because he is so quick to get down. And I see him getting put in omoplata attempts and all this other shit from the bottom from Vince Cachero, who, like, just fucking gives up takedowns like it's nobody's business. So, I mean, Ronnie Lawrence, he washed some guy on the Dana White's Contender Series. He washed Vince Cachero. So I think he's going to face a lot more resistance as far as takedown attempts go against Trevin Jones. I do know that he had an opponent switch. I don't, you know, I know he's taking this fight and everything. It is kind of a short notice type of deal in my book. A quick switch like this on an opponent. Jones is super intelligent, and I think he's a really good counter striker. So I saw Vince Cachero kind of touch Lawrence like once or twice, and Lawrence immediately shoots for a takedown. And it's great. He lands it, but he doesn't really get the top control. And Jones is such a better grappler than Vince Cachero. So I'm taking a shot on the underdog straight up, plus 130, Trevin Jones.
All right.
We move right along. Jinyu Frye versus Ashley Yoder. And it's so funny. I don't know how I have one of my strongest plays of the card here, but I do. It's super interesting. So Jinyu Frye, she's given up 4 inches of height, 4 inches of reach. She's also 3 years older. And Ashley Yoder, she's a decision machine. So, you know, you can expect this fight to go the distance, which now that I said that, expect to finish. Obviously that's baked into the line. So not too interesting. I mean, Ashley Yoder, it just seems like she's got such an advantage as far as size goes, such an advantage as far as just like output, whether it's grappling or striking. And it's not going to be pretty. In fact, I might even recommend a split decision bet or something like that. But I don't know. Are you feeling confident either way here?
I certainly – it's not my favorite play of the card. But, yeah, I do like Ashley Yoder here. I think that she should be skilled enough to get it done with her grappling and relative striking pressure. The thing from the problem with Frye is that we don't really see much output from her at all. And that's like really concerning when she's not necessarily the best grappler. So if you're not striking and you're not a good grappler, what are we doing in there? So that is mildly concerning. So I think that they're giving Yoder a chance to win a fight after taking a, I don't know if it's doing the UFC a favor, but maybe doing the UFC a favor and giving Angela Hill that rematch to kind of give her a win, get her back in the win column because she's relatively marketable. Yeah, it's an interesting fight. The problem I see is that it's relatively low level women's MMA, and the line is kind of wide, no?
It's the money line isn't too crazy wide. You know, you got Frye at plus 125 and Yoder minus 145. Yeah. I'm going to actually do like a very small parlay on this card. Not my normal hammer one. So actually, yeah she's going to be the first leg minus 145. And then actually as far as like a prop goes, I thought it was kind of funny. You know, maybe I saw they had all these different types of, new things on DraftKings. So like to win by decision was plus 100, but like I just have the feeling it's going to be super sketchy. Plus 450 to be a split decision for win for Yoder. I mean, that's kind of fun, right?
That is kind of fun if you want to take a small stab on that.
Just a little one, nothing crazy.
I did see this fight as a parlay piece as well. I do think Yoder wins. I like the Yoder and the over 1.5 at minus 125 as a parlay piece.
All right.
Because I think it goes some time.
Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward that Frye, I mean, she looks for the big left hand, and Yoder has literally never been knocked out. And it's just like, as far as the output goes, I mean, like, for Yoder to be a grappler first and landing, you know, more strikes per minute, it's pretty bad outlook as far as Frye goes. But, I mean, she was impressive in her last performance, so I don't want to put her down completely. It's just this is a much more experienced opponent.
Yeah, and one that's going to actually do something off of her back if that's where the fight ends up.
Agreed.
Which is, I honestly think, is kind of crazy on some level. I didn't hear anybody else talking about this. Why is Jinyu Frye, who beat Gloria DePaula, why is she on the undercard and Gloria gets the main card after she got whooped?
I completely agree with you. However, I know from a Dana White standpoint,
you're pushing Cheyenne Baez.
And DePaula, I mean, both attractive, both off Dana White Contender Series. So as opposed to the older Frye and Yoder, they're trying to push them out the back door, this fight on their contracts, you know.
I don't know. Baez is pretty bad, but Yoder might give her a run for her money. And by bad, I mean.
Good. Yes. No, I got you, man. I mean, hey, listen, I mean, we can all admit that. But hey, let's get on to the next fight, shall we? Danny Chavez versus Kai Kamaka third. Man, this fight is super close on the line. You got Kamaka minus 115, Chavez minus 105. I lean towards the underdog here, and
as do I.
It's pretty curious to see, like, statistically at least, how Kamaka and Chavez line up. But then you, like, look at their level of competition.
It's the tail. It's like that. There's like, what's that quote? It's like there's lies, bold lies, and then there's statistics. Like the statistics on Kamaka make him look like he's unbelievable. Like he's the next champion. And then
it's unreal.
I don't know why. I mean, it's impressive, really. I mean, there is no way around it. I mean, the stats are impressive, but I guess when you try to give them context, you realize that he does belong in the UFC. He's just, I don't know that he could ever push to the top.
So,
20, top 15.
All right. Let me do an illustration for you, because this is what I've seen in almost every Kai Kamaka fight, and it really frustrates me, because you see all the talent, but like, one, he lacks finishing ability. We're talking about a guy that has one submission win and seven decision wins. So we're not seeing him with all his punching and landing combos. And, you know, he doesn't have the finishing power. Two, first round against TJ Brown lands 22 strikes. Second round lands 26. Third round lands 13. I mean, damn. Then you look at against JSP, first round, you know, he lands 35. Second round, 12. And he gives up 2 minutes and 50 seconds of control time. Bam, there you go. Look at that. That's a fall off. Then you look at against Tony Kelly, Kai Kamaka, he lands 43 strikes, then 32. And then he lands 39. But let me tell you something about that 39. He gets a break because he gets hit in the nuts. And this dude is gassed. He looks like he's about to get finished. And he gets hit in the nuts and he takes his time. He recovers like you should. He comes back and he finishes out the round strong. But I just don't trust Kai Kamaka's cardio. And I feel like the second this gets into the wrestling exchanges, because that's what Chavez is definitely going to be looking to do. He took that approach against TJ Brown. He's got 100% takedown accuracy. Obviously, it didn't work so well against Jared Gordon for Chavez. But if you were to see Kai Kamaka in that fight, I'm pretty sure it would be very similar. Chavez did land a takedown on Gordon still, 1-1, and he went 4-4 on TJ Brown, who, as we saw against Kai Kamaka, TJ Brown was able to put on a performance at least against Kamaka, and turn it up late. And, you know, maybe the decision wasn't right. Maybe it really didn't go to the right guy, but it's just like Kamaka.
Oh, that decision was not right. That decision was not right. He did win the fight.
Yeah, but it's just like you put yourself in the position by looking bad down the stretch. And I mean, that's not how the judging should be. It doesn't make sense how they didn't give him the second round, honestly. But that's just kind of what happened, where Chavez is able to really, you know, get the control time on Brown. So I definitely lean Chavez minus 105. I feel like he should be able to put the wrestling pressure on and then gas out Kamaka.
Yeah, I definitely agree with everything you said. I really do like Chavez here. I think if you can get Chavez at plus money on the money line, I think that's a smart play. I think obviously that there still might be some value at even money, because I think maybe Chavez should have been the favorite here, just a slight favorite, mind you. I am going to parlay this fight to the one before it. So I'm going to parlay the Yoder and over 1.5. And there were two things I'm thinking about. It's either the very chalky, just the simple over 1.5 in this fight. So it's over 1.5 in Ashley Yoder parlayed to the over 1.5 in this fight at plus 128. That's probably the one I'm leaning with. Or the Ashley Yoder and the over 1.5 parlayed just to this fight to go the distance.
Yeah, I definitely see this one going. Chavez, I feel like, you know, his weakness as far as it goes, like he doesn't have the greatest KO power either. I mean, only 3 knockouts on his record, 8 decisions. So I know he's got the cardio at least, and that's why I feel good about playing him. So like realistically, Chavez by decision is plus 240. That feels pretty solid to me. But yeah, I like your idea of the over. I'm going to play it with the side because I feel like Chavez just should be a deserved like minus 150 here. It really did not leave me with good feelings the way I saw Kamaka finish out his last few fights. And I know that Chavez isn't going to take a knockout and he's not going to get submitted by Kamaka. So, I see this one going.
Sorry, Red Sox are acquiring Kyle Schwarber. What? Why?
Need some power, can play him at first base because Bobby Dalbec is not ready for the majors to play in the playoffs.
I just was surprised that that's where he went of all places.
Very true. Well, we lost out on Rizzo and Gallo, so had to do something, right?
I guess that's fair.
But yeah, so that brings us on to a real greasy fight here, huh? We got Chris Grutzmacher versus Rafa Garcia. And Rafa Garcia put on a gritty performance for a guy facing a guy named Gritz in his debut against Nasrat Haqparast. Garcia really impressed me. He had Haqparast hurt in the first round. Overhands, he puts on pressure. He can take a punch. I really liked what I saw from him. And is that not reflected in the line here? It's pretty safe to say that the bookmakers are all over this one in my book because Grutzmacher just absolute, tailor-made wins for him in Laveras and Lozon at the very tail end of his career. And then he just –
how did you pronounce that name? Lozon? Lozon?
Lozon.
Lozon?
Lozon. I don't know.
Like a cow zone.
I'm in the zone. I'm in the zone, bro.
You're in the cow zone.
Maybe a little bit too high.
Jesus Christ.
But it's really just sketchy to be playing it, but damn, if it's not a parlay piece for me with Yoder, then what am I doing, you know?
Oh yeah, you're crazy. So my problem with this fight is something that we've talked about quite often here on Chronic Combat, is the person actually good enough to warrant the line? And while Chris Grutzmacher has given UFC fans like very little reason to have any faith in him at all, showed up at the last fight, didn't look good, got pieced up by Alexander Hernandez and taken out like quite brutally. Like it looked like a World Star video. I mean, it was bad. So at this point, he's kind of got a sketchy chin at 35 years old. I just start to see the narrative start to slip away. And when you see somebody at, near like minus 250, nearly minus 300, you're supposed to run through guys. And I don't know where this narrative of Rafa Garcia by knockout is. He has one career professional knockout. That's it. One, he's a submission guy. So he's got decent boxing, he keeps a high guard, he seems to have a good gas tank, but one KO. So if Chris Grutzmacher could like tailor-made pick anybody, he's probably gonna try to pick a guy that doesn't rely on knockout power. Like that's not his thing. So yeah, is it possible Grutzmacher just folds quickly, easily, and no problem? Sure. But if he offers any sort of resistance, this fight could get sketchy for no reason. But that being said, Garcia is the better fighter. Like he should win. It really shouldn't be a problem. Like I do feel comfortable parlaying Garcia slightly. Like I'm going to parlay him lightly to a fight in a little bit that we'll talk about. I do think that he wins. I just think that the line's too high, simply put. I've seen lesser men and ladies shit in the apple pie. So
I agree with that. I mean, it definitely makes sense. And that's why I keep saying like this parlay this week, I am not throwing the hammer on. It's not, I might throw $20. I'm not throwing a full hundred on like Rafa Garcia and Ashley Yoder. But to me, like these are the safest spots on the card at this point, because I mean, shit, I saw Garcia wobble Hakparas like visibly. So it's not that he doesn't have power. I just think he's one of those guys where like if he hurts you, he goes to the grappling.
Okay, but all right, but is Nasrat the chinny, like the guy with the strongest chin?
But
so,
like
I don't really like that.
The guy with the strongest chin?
Well, no, but
so no, I agree with you. I'm not saying that he gets the knockout. I'm not even saying play the finish. We could just see a greasy grappling match here.
Yeah. I mean the one
you
one
know,
of,
I mean
one of the simple plays I did like was the round three or decision for Garcia at +110. So that's a good way to take a guy that this is a pretty, you know, chalky fight. I think that's an interesting way to try to get some positive line value on it, because I don't think that he gets the finish super early. Like I think if Gutzmacher is even half a fighter that he's supposed to be, that he has to go out there and fight. Like you can't just go out there and fall asleep, because you're not going to have a job much longer. So I do think that this racks up a little bit of time. And then for whatever reason, Garcia by sub is +200. So I don't know that that's super juicy, but you know, I think that's his one way to get the finish if he's going to get it.
Gutzmacher has been sub 3 times and Garcia's got 7 subs. So if you tell me there's a submission prop, it's solid plus money there, +200.
Well, +200 is DraftKings. So if that means FanDuel will probably have it like +320 or some craziness. Last I checked, FanDuel's been so behind. They didn't have any props up today.
That's pretty horrible.
It was really horrible. Super disappointing. I don't know if they're focused with the Olympics or what they're doing, but they don't have the props up.
Wow, that's super sketchy, to be honest with you, because FanDuel used to have it ready on Tuesdays at one point during the pandemic, and now DraftKings is the one getting it out on Tuesdays and offering all these new crazy props and everything. So it's like...
Well, DraftKings really does have the, like, I feel like the money behind it. I don't think FanDuel is nearly as popular.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that.
I feel like it's like Apple to Android. Like, yeah, sure, people use an Android, but I think it's still like 2 or 3 to 1.
No, I totally feel that. Well, I'm glad that they caught up and finally started putting their shit out early. So, yeah, I mean, there we go. If you want to prop this fight for me, yeah, there we go. +200 on the sub, because it's definitely happened multiple times for Grits. And, yeah, Garcia, that's definitely a big part of his game. But I could see it. I could see this fight ending any which way. So I'm just gonna take Garcia as a piece of my parlay. I got one more leg coming.
Really quickly, I guess, what is Garcia in the distance? Just to like, I guess, save it in terms of instead of picking sub and.
+120.
Yeah, that's. That's not bad.
That's
either.
Solid.
It's not bad either. I like that.
They really seem to think a decision is the most probable thing, which is actually kind of interesting for this fight.
Yeah, like I do. I that's what I'm saying. Like I think that there could be a relative overreaction to Gutzmacher's getting his clock cleaned by Hernandez, who's a you know, a brick shithouse. In any event.
I guess that means it's time to move on. Seems like we're pretty solidly on a side there.
Yeah, and in this agreement.
And this one is about as sketchy as a fight can get, as far as like having like real good historical tape, having like UFC experience. I mean, we're talking got two guys fresh off of Dana White Contender Series. Isn't that kind of weird that they put these guys up against each other? I mean, I know Bagdasarian didn't get a contract immediately, but Colin Anglin did. And I think it's weird to see these guys matched up against each other right now.
Yeah, Anglin was supposed to fight Sungwoo Choi, but he withdrew in February.
Yeah, I mean, like, damn.
what does that mean?
That's a tough debut right there.
Right, agreed. Yeah, all right. I just wanted to make sure that's what you meant.
Yeah, but Bagdasarian, I mean, super impressive kickboxer, but like, this guy's got almost all first round finishes, and that decision win on Contender Series is like as sketchy as it gets as the fight goes on.
100%.
Whereas Colin Anglin, he shows really good cardio in his fight, but like he also shows he keeps his chin up in the fucking air and he swings wild looping punches. So it's like, how do I trust either guy in this fight? Because they are basically the perfect counter for each other.
Yeah.
And one of these guys is going to look like they should have been like a minus 300 after the fight.
That's an interesting point. And I think that's why I end up on Anglin, because I think in a coin flip fight, I'm going to take a plus money play. So I like Anglin plus 125. From what I saw, yeah, Anglin does keep his hands low, but he's got the good combos. He's got good feints. He's at Factory X, so you know his Muay Thai is on point. He was totally and completely outstruck, like 21-6 or something, in his Dana White Contender Series fight, and then came back as the guy continued to gas out. He comes back and wins the fight. So, and again, super impressively, and I may have this sounds like a little bit earlier as well, he was a major underdog in his Dana White Contender Series fight, Colin Anglin was, and he ends up pulling it out, like you just said, in the later rounds. So when you look at somebody like Melsick, who is a southpaw kickboxer, you know, hard power punches, but he throws everything into his strikes, walks forward like a zombie, tons of output, but then the questionable cardio, and he's not well versed in the grappling or the wrestling. I think I see Colin taking it to the clinch and eventually pushing a tired Bagdasarian up against the cage. So, like I said, I like Anglin plus 125. I think I like Anglin round 3 or decision at plus 180, and the Anglin and the over 1.5 plus 165 as well. Because I think there's some slight value in that. I'm going to look like an idiot if Bagdasarian knocks him out in the first 2 minutes, which is very possible. But I think if it gets out of that first 2 minutes, we got a plus money play on a good fighter.
That's definitely super interesting when you put it that way. I would definitely feel comfortable being on the Anglin side as the fight goes on. But if you had to ask me, I think that the highest probability of, like, you know, what we're looking at as far as, like, what do I think, you know, Bagdasarian could definitely walk out of here with a first round knockout. And I think, you know, it's definitely like one of those ones that could even be like the first minute type of deal. That, you know, like you put it, Anglin, as this fight goes on, the experience getting into clinch exchanges and initiating his wrestling going to be super helpful, but it's not like he has the deepest of backgrounds in mixed martial arts overall. Whereas Bagdasarian, I mean, at least he's got the kickboxing and the boxing experience, but man, he really looks horrible as the fights go on in those outlets as well. So yeah, it's super sketchy to me. I'm not going to have
strong play. You know, listen, I pick a side and I try to find some value.
No, for sure.
That doesn't mean he's my dog of the day or anything like that. I mean, I wouldn't put more than like a unit on this fight. Like, I mean, you can't really go very heavy.
Definitely. I feel you there. Well, that just about sums it up. So why don't we get on to, so what is this? Our prelim headliner here.
What a weird fight. With another fighter coming off a multi-year layoff. There's a couple fighters I think on this card similar to last week's and the week before with multi-year layoffs, and Nico Moitano is the main one here.
Yeah, she's coming in against Wu Yanan and Minus 255 to plus 205. I mean, damn, how did we find ourselves here with Nico Moitano? I mean, like,
listen, we've said this before. Women's MMA, this line is too wide. I'm going to tell you that right now. I don't care if Nico...
On a low-level fight like this, you're right.
I don't care if Nico Moitano goes out there and gets a submission in the first 30 seconds. This line is too wide. And, you know, she's got a multi-year layoff with COVID and injuries forcing her out of multiple different bouts. Yanan Wu, I think she's a gamer. I think she's a beast. I think she ran into a really tough matchup with Jocelyn Edwards and Mizuki. And then you see her beat Laura Mueller, who's currently out of the UFC. She lost to Gina Mazzani. you know, back in 2017, and then lost to Yana Kuniskaya in the regional scene. So I don't like, those are good names to lose to. So yeah, could Nico Montano be in that company, in that class? Sure. But she's a 4-3 record, hasn't fought recently. Literally the only reason I'm taking her and not putting up the biggest shit fit about this line is because we've seen these multi-year layoff fighters cash a lot. Like it's been significantly more often than not. So
yeah, I agree with that. Plus the other reason is like, she's got some serious wrestling chops. It's not like she's an absolute trash fighter or whatever. It's just like, she keeps continually pulling out of fights. She stepped out of the Shevchenko title fight. I think that really sits in people's minds. But the other thing is, like, you see her, Montano, win like a full round of grappling against Juliana Pena before getting the tide turned on her, you know, on the feed. And then the rest of the fight, it wasn't so great, but she's got the talent for sure. I mean, she gets takedowns and control on Roxanne Mataferi and on Juliana Pena. So I know that she's got the talent, but like, Wuyanan is just so bad in the wrestling exchanges. You know, she needs to fight on the feet. If it's from distance, she'll have a chance. And like, if you have a ticket on her and it goes to the decision, you know, it's possible that you're feeling kind of all right about it, but like, I'm just not touching it. I'll pick Montano, but there's nothing here that interests me.
There was, and it's funny that you say that, there was really not much that interests me as well. But there was a similar play that you had thought of earlier with these new things that DraftKings offers. I do think that the wrestling is a problem for Wu. So I think that Nico will eventually go there and lay on top. I think it's going to be a unanimous decision. So the decision play is -135 for Nico. But you can get her by unanimous decision at +130.
Interesting idea. Look at that, using the new systems out here.
You know,
becoming self-aware.
Listen, if they offer the props, man, I'm gonna look at them at the very least.
All right, I like that. So let's get on to kicking off our main card, right? Moving along from that one, we got Brian Barberina versus Jason Witt. Pretty interesting intro to the UFC for Witt so far. A couple brutal knockouts within a minute and a half total, and a really gritty submission win over an overweight fighter that probably didn't belong in the UFC in Cole Williams. So he comes in against Barberina, who until recently I didn't know was coming off of this crazy internal bleeding story, emergency surgery, doctor says don't fight again, and here's Barberina fighting again.
Yeah, so, I don't really know about that either at -275.
Man, but just looking at Jason Witt and just 5 knockouts, 2 submission losses on his record, and Barberina's got 10 knockouts and 2 submission wins on his record, and it's like I have a greasy parlay this week, man, and fuck if Brian Barberina's not joining in on it. Like,
Jesus.
It's a horrible idea. No. I'm keeping it small. But
I think there's another fighter that you could put in there instead. I don't think he's the one.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just
I'm ready for Jason Witt. I'm ready for Jason Witt to come out here, take some shots, surprise everybody, and then out grapple a tired and out of shape Brian Barberina to like some sort of crazy decision or late submission win or something. This line is too wide. Absolutely insane. There's no way that I'm playing by Brian Barberina here. I may pick him based on weigh-ins, but you can't. The reason again is simply the line. I think that people are overreacting to Jason Witt's crazy 2 sub-1 minute knockouts. I mean, otherwise he really needs to retire. Really bad.
It's so suspect that they both came on straight punches that he could see coming. Like, I just hate that so much.
Yeah, man. Listen, it hit him flush in the jaw. You watch his, like, his face ripple and go to sleep. I just, the thing is that I don't know that Brian Barberino has lots of
power, or really any power. Yeah, he knocked out Jake Ellenberger, but that was at a time where Jake Ellenberger's, you know, chin was just was failing him. So that was started, you know, continuing that avalanche. You know, he beat Joe Proctor by knees and punches. Okay. And then I guess he has some, you know, issue with Ellenberger's, because then his leather finishes Joe Ellenberger. I don't know. I don't really see him getting a finish. So if you let Jason Witt hang around, we have no idea what he looks like, because we've never really seen it. I mean, against Cole Williams, he gets the second round, but so it's a super, super sketchy fight. I know that if I bet Brian Barberena, not only will he make sure to lose, but I will be hanging from the rafters because I decided to play somebody I know is not very good at nearly minus 300.
That's why I said my parlay is super small money. I just can't help it, man. Listen, this is a total fade of Jason Witt, and I know Barberena has been in there with. Here are the names he's lost to.
Yeah, listen, he might be a UFC favorite. So like, he might be a Dana White, you know, Sean Shelby favorite, a McMaynard favorite. They might be giving him one here. They may love his warrior spirit, so they're giving him, like, you know, a chance to get a win, like, off the hospital bed. So
yeah, I'll take a one-unit shot on a crazy parlay. Barberena, he's lost to Chad the Priest, Colby Covington, Leon Edwards, Vicente Luque, Randy Brown. I don't think Jason Witt fits in with those names.
I don't know. You just start to hear the names drop off, right? Usman, down to Luque, down to Randy Brown, right? Okay, right? Those are all quality names, but you see the quality in those names continue to depreciate. So would you be that insanely surprised if we are talking on the pod next week about how Jason Witt surprised everybody? I guess
I just can't help myself.
I just can't help myself. Listen, I get
on this specific one. It's just I understand everything you're saying. I really probably shouldn't.
And
be
listen,
playing
I want
Barberena.
Him out. I want Jason Witt out of the UFC too. I hate that Vanilla Gorilla nickname. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Well, isn't there a second Vanilla Gorilla?
There's.
Who else is that?
There's too many. Chase Sherman.
Yeah, that's terrible. But at least he looks more like a gorilla. That's actually funny.
Anyways, let's get on to our next fight, where I think we have something a little bit stronger.
Oh, yeah. That Jameson whiskey.
We got Ryan Benoit versus Zaruk Arashev. And, man, Ryan Benoit, whenever he fights, it's a sloppy mess, man. Like, it's never, like, easy. There's always a split decision waiting. There's always a knockdown or a stumble or someone getting hurt. Or, like, I just feel like Ryan Benoit fights are super messy. And, like, Adashev, he's 3-3 and he's in the UFC. He was 16-3 as a kickboxer. Tons of accolades. He was in Bellator. He gets in the UFC because they needed a short notice opponent for Tyson Nam. He misses weight. He gets knocked out on an overhand counter. And he kept his hands low and went to throw a low kick and hook, and he got beat to the punch. And as he goes to land the hook, he's getting fucking knocked out. Tyson Nam, what are you going to do? Sumudarji, everyone comes in, saying Sumudarji by knockout. Adashev, no chin. Adashev comes in, great shape. And he puts on, you know, at least a little bit better of a performance and takes Mudarji the distance. Actually hurts him a couple times in round two. So that kind of sticks out in everyone's minds, big time stuff. But Ryan Benoit, man, 3-5 in the UFC himself. So dropped by Alatang Hei Lee in round one. I know it wasn't an official knockdown, but like I saw that shit. Like I saw that.
I saw that.
Although he has 4 knockdowns of his own in the UFC, all spread out through different fights. So I got to give Benoit credit. The dude's got some power in his hands, but like, on the scale last time, he was 129 for a 125 fight, and they had to cancel it. So here we are a few months later. Try it again. Benoit, can you make the weight? Can you look good on the scale? I don't know, man. And even if he does, this fight, I see it being like an inside the distance type of deal. Both these guys have a lot of their losses coming inside the distance, a lot of their fights ending inside the distance. I know we're at a lower weight class, so it's not necessarily like most probable, but to go the distance, no, plus 120. I think that's interesting.
Wow. I can certainly see where you went with that, because their wins kind of maybe have come by some finishes. I just, when you have low level MMA like this, I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess they could both knock, they could both finish each other, but they also could both play to each other's strengths and weaknesses and have like a fun little sparring session in there and go the distance, because I don't see that either one of them are cutthroat killers that are really trying to kill the other one. So my feeling wasn't really on a, what it, like a prop per se. It was really more on a side, and my side is a Zaruk Adashev. I have no idea why or how Ryan Benoit's favored to anybody at this point in time. It's 10-7. He's lost 3 of his last 4. And you looked to who, like you said, Alatang, that's a really, really bad loss. And Tim Elliott in a fight that he was could have won. It was a close fight, an interesting fight, but he has all the tools, and he on some level, and he doesn't really apply it very well. He's just kind of a low IQ fighter, and the only thing he really does have going for him is that power. And you have to worry, like you said, about the weight cut stuff, because he's been struggling with the weight. So the other thing I really quickly wanted to say was Adashev's his 2 losses, I think you probably said it, to Sumadarji and Tyson Nam. You can't shake your head about those. Those are Sumadarji's up and coming. I cannot wait to see him fight again. And Tyson Nam is a legitimately a well-respected mixed martial artist. I mean, he's a veteran in the sport, and he's got unbelievable power for the weight division. So I like Adashev here in probably a pick'em fight, or maybe where he should have been a favorite at plus money. Obviously barring weigh-ins.
I definitely lean that way. I totally feel like Adashev is the side here. I mean, looking up and down the card, I'm not sure that like I have this super, you know, like, I won't go as far to say it's like a dog of the day for me or anything, but like, yeah, he definitely seems like the cleaner kickboxer, and he's not giving up nearly as much reach as he did in his first couple fights. I think Adashev really had a chance to adjust to the UFC here, and we could see a good performance.
Well, yeah, I guess we would say our dog of the day would be Danny Chavez, if you can get him at the dog price, because that is the original.
I mean,
dog.
I would agree with that. You know, we really didn't do a good job selling that dog of the day as far as like, but it's tough. I mean,
because again, Kai Kamaka's going to make
this 105,
and he's going to make it competitive. Kai's going to make a competitive fight, so I believe he is our strongest dog play. But I mean, listen, there's a few dogs that I like, including Colin Anglin, including Zaruk Adashev, and you know, possibly another one going forward.
Yeah, I totally feel that, and yeah, you're not going to get much disagreement on that pick from me. So let's get on to our next fight here. We got Nicholas Stolce versus Jared Gooden making the real late notice appearance here during fight week, even, right? Munir Lazez has to drop out due to visa issues. So in steps Gooden, 0-2 so far in the UFC. Stolce, 0-1. So,
Got to get a win.
Somebody's got to get one, right? And, you know, we saw it actually open up with Gooden as the slight favorite. And then it just gets steamed, and now Stolce is like minus 200. I mean, we didn't have access to that line on DraftKings or anything.
I wish we did.
But it was much closer. It was like a minus 130 by the time it opened to us.
Mm-hmm.
So Stolce minus 200. That's absolutely crazy. Gooden back up against the wall. He fought Joban and Nurmagomedov in his 2 fights to start the UFC. So it's like you can give him a pass for how he looked overall, and he definitely should be bringing an exciting fight. But like Stolze does seem the better guy, and he's had a full camp, so I definitely lean that way. But like, how confident could I be there?
I actually feel relatively decent about Stolze, as good as you can that with the limited sample size that we have. You give him his UFC debut versus Ramazan Ameev, right? So what does that tell you about what you think about him? Obviously, do you think decently highly of him? When you look at his past record, he's not necessarily fighting the saltiest guys. Before he gets to the UFC, 16-5, 13-4, 8-2. I mean, he's fighting, you know, not tomato cans. So, you know, from the highlights and the things that I saw, I was actually pretty impressed with his, you know, with his body of work and his skill set. I think Ramazan Ameev is like an incredible fighter and a problem for almost anybody. What I see from Gooden, and I did make sure to go back and not just watch the Nurmagomedov and Joban fight, but I made sure to go back and watch his Trent McCown Titan FC fight. Man, he's so unorthodox. He's still so low output. He keeps his hands down extremely low. And at the end of the day, even in the Trent McCown fight, he's too hittable. He's hittable. And that's going to be a problem for him. So I like Stolze here. I like Stolze to get the job done. I think you parlay Stolze money line with Garcia money line to you know, chalky ass lines to get it. You get it at plus 100, and that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, that's
oh, and by the way, there's no props available for this fight, so shout out.
yeah, I mean, seems pretty simple to me. I mean, Stolze is definitely my pick. I don't know why I'm not so interested in parlaying him when I'm interested in parlaying Barbarina. So,
thank you. I'm glad you pulled it out because that was the fighter when I said it earlier. I think that it shouldn't be Barbarina. I think it should be Stolze.
So that is interesting. And listen, I mean, this is all way independent. I don't have these bets placed yet. I would like to see Barbarina on the scale before I place money on him. So, and who knows if I could end up getting canceled due to a botched weight cut or anything.
Whatever.
Given his medical condition. So
any fight can get canceled for any reason. Yeah. So
anyways, I mean, listen, Garcia and Yoder themselves are plus money. So it's like, maybe I don't try to get too cute as it goes on.
Dude, if that's wait, Garcia and Yoder is plus money, straight up money line.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Because Yoder's minus 145.
That's the play.
Yeah, that's probably just a smarter play.
Why add any sketchiness if you don't have to? Then you can make a 1-unit parlay into a 1.5-unit parlay or 2-unit parlay because we actually think that it's like a possible, like a legitimate chance to win.
Interesting.
Although that being said, it's Ashley Yoder. Like, geez Louise, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's like, you know what? This is a sketchy parlay. We might as well go all in, right?
Right. Five units.
Maybe I add Stolze in, do a four-legger, right?
Beautiful. And while you're at
have some fun, right?
While you're at it, we'll throw some tennis bets in there.
Yeah.
couple cricket and ping pong.
We might as well, man.
Might as well, bro.
Let's get on to our next fight. I actually feel like I have a pretty solid one here. We got
really this one. I have a solid one on this one. This fight is like, at least, this fight is crazy. Nah.
Okay, so here's my thoughts. Cheyenne Bays.
Oh god, 5-2. I love her.
Gloria DePaola, 5-3.
I don't mind her either.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the UFC put them on the main card. Like we said, very marketable. DePaola, however, comes in with a 2-inch height advantage, 4-inch reach advantage. And, you know, one more loss under her belt, all decisions. So both women have only lost by decision. But DePaola has shown a little bit more power, notching 3 knockouts. Bays has shown a little bit more wrestling. She does have 4 decision wins. But just to see how horrible she was on bottom against Montserrat Ruiz, I mean, Cheyenne Bays really left a bad taste in my mouth as far as, like, her overall IQ and game plan. And DePaola, similar things, facing Jin Yu Fry, at least she's like a huge veteran, was an Invicta champion, and had at least been around the game longer than Ruiz, who used literally one method to get Cheyenne Baze down over and over. So I know that Baze can come in with a wrestling advantage. I just don't trust her overall IQ and ability to execute a game plan for 15 minutes. So facing someone in DePaula that has so many advantages in the reach, I mean, damn, I'm super interested in the underdog play here, because why is this line so wide?
Yeah, probably. Like, what's the line? Minus 190? Yeah, maybe it's a little wide.
That's too much.
I don't know. Gloria didn't really show you much of anything. Her MMA experience is extremely salty with two losses on it. The one loss being to Ariane Carnelosi, who we know is actually pretty decent. Otherwise, I don't. She gave you nothing to feel good about in that last fight. You want to be mad at Cheyenne Baez for low fight IQ. You have to be more mad at Gloria DePaula for low fight IQ, because in the second round she showed you that she had what it takes to beat Jin Yu Fry, and then the third round she goes back down. It made no sense. Really, really poor. Shout out Alex Bahunin. I would love to hear what somebody like him would have to say about this. I think Cheyenne Baez was absolutely embarrassed to lose her last fight, differently than DePaula would have been. I think she was really, really embarrassed with her husband losing as well. And I believe he's now lost a second fight, right? So
they left Fortis, bro.
Right. So I really think that
sketchy to me.
I think that she's gonna come out and put on a performance with her wrestling.
I mean, I don't trust it, man. I'll be honest with
you. I'm not parlaying it. The prop I have for you is buys by decision -115. And I didn't even feel good enough to say unanimous or split, because it's like, I don't know. It could definitely be sketchy.
I saw, at least in the Dana White Contender Series performance, that DePaula is throwing up some crazy submission attempts and working her guard against Macias. Facing Jin Yu Fry, once again, that's a big-time veteran of the game. And someone whose back was up against the wall losing their first two UFC fights. Whereas, like, Baze fights someone coming in on 4 days' notice who, you know, just is not as experienced as Fry. So, really, it does stick out to me a lot worse. And there's a reason why Baze should be embarrassed for the way that she lost to Conejo, to Montserrat Ruiz. I really, really do think that the striking, the length, and, you know, just the better experience on the feet for DePaula against someone that I just don't trust to execute a game plan as an underdog. You know, if DePaula is the favorite here, I'm probably finding ways to talk myself into Cheyenne Baze.
Yeah,
I think this fight should be 50-50. There's no reason for the line to be as wise as it is. If you're saying you see -190, that means DePaula is probably somewhere near +160 at this point. I'm seeing +150 on DraftKings. So, I mean, to me, that's good enough for a play. It's just, if this stays on the feet, DePaula has the advantage. And if it goes to the mat, I think that the long limbs offer a submission threat where I don't trust Baze and her top control.
Yeah, I mean, she's -175 on FanDuel to +144.
Ew, that's a horrible line, because it's -170 to +150 on DraftKings. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
So yeah, I mean, that's my play. It's not a dog of the day. It's probably on the same level, maybe a little bit more than like a Malcolm Gordon type of idea. Like,
wow, I like your, no, I don't know that I agree, because I like the Malcolm Gordon play, because that we were fading not only the narrative of the knockout, but it was how bad Figueiredo is. I guess you're really saying that Baez is that bad? I don't think she's that bad.
No, I'm saying from a dollar perspective. Because, I mean, my Malcolm Gordon play was super small.
I meant from a philosophy standpoint.
No. I'm just talking a dollar perspective. This is not my dog of the day. This is not $50 on TJ Dillashaw. This isn't whatever. This is like, I'm going to throw $10 to $20 on DePaula so that on the third to last fight of the night, I'll have like a little something to sweat out. And like, I like the underdog here, you know?
I think this is a smoke break fight.
Nah, I don't think that. Nah, I really don't. I think it'll be exciting. It'll be more exciting than either of their last two fights. So I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Ruiz is so exciting to me. There's no way.
I mean, when you're sitting in a scarfold for like 10 minutes of the fight, it's super not interesting.
I don't know.
The third round, Baze puts it on. Yeah, so it's like,
that, you know, exactly. And that too, right? Thank you for bringing that up. How about that third round?
Yeah, I mean, but not nearly enough.
No, it wasn't, but.
No. And then she still gets taken down. So, I mean, fuck that.
I don't know.
The thing is, I think both of them are an equal fade, and the fact that I'm getting such a wide line here tells me I need to make a play.
What fight did I say that about earlier?
Montano and Yanan? Or did you say that about...
No, anyone? I think it might have been Barbarena and Witt.
Ah, yeah. Anyways, here we are at our cobbled together, really interesting co-main event.
Yeah, really crazy card. I'm excited. Listen, I like 13 fights. Anytime you get a lot of fights, it makes me a happy camper. So,
yeah, that's fair. I mean, listen, Kyung Ho Kang versus Hani Yaya. The thing that jumped off the page to me is the 3-inch height advantage and the 6-inch reach advantage. And then just looking at like the grappling and the statistics and how they fight their fights. I mean, these guys love getting into grappling exchanges. They love it. And
they love it.
What happens when you get two guys that are obsessed with grappling? It ends up being a distance battle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I can still see these guys, you know, getting into it because they really love their grappling. But if it ends up from distance, you know, Kong spends double the amount of time from distance that Yaya does.
Yeah.
And he's got the 6-inch reach advantage. And Yaya is kind of like a zombie coming forward trying to just get a hold of you. And his wrestling really isn't that great. Whereas Kong is like, I'm impressed with his takedown abilities. Yaya more just smothers you. And if you're not that level of grappler, I think, you know, he's able to kind of just draw you out and really just put the pressure on. Like, but as far as like the higher level guys go, I mean, like Ricky Simone able to wrestle with him, Enrique Barzola able to wrestle with him. And then, in his last fight against Rodriguez, I mean, he did what he needed to do. I mean, that's a guy you got to take over every time. But Kong, I mean, has been super impressive in his run in the UFC, maybe not against the type of level of competition that we've seen for Yaya. But it's not like he's getting early submissions all the time. So, you know, he's got the cardio to be able to go forward. I like him better from distance. I like his overall wrestling as well to save him from the jiu-jitsu. So I think that my pick is minus.
What?
Minus 125 on Kong.
Wow. Dude, straight up money line.
Straight up. That's one of my most confident plays.
One of your most confident plays. I'm not sure. That's wow. I'll say that this fight is probably the fight I'm could be least confident in, possibly on the whole card. There's so many different weird wrinkles to this fight that do kind of make it interesting. I lean at least at this stage to Rani Yaya. And like I said, I retain my right to absolutely change not only my bets for this one, but even my pick simply because I'm still not 100% sure. I want to see face-offs, weigh-ins, that kind of thing. I did like Kang's like mixed martial arts ability, that he is a background in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, and wrestling. I had a serious, serious problem with his last fight against Ping Yan Liu. He lays on top of Liu for, I don't know what the number is. I mean, I nearly must be like 10 minutes.
About 12 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, he lays on there for a long time, and he gets outstruck. Like, no way around it, outstruck. That's horrible. It's horrible. He loses the third round, is bleeding all over this guy that he spent 12 minutes on top of. It makes no sense. So I don't know how, and he was getting tagged by Lou. And he was getting tagged by Brandon Davis in both of these split decisions. I like that Yaya really throws heavy because he's going to need it. I don't know that Kang has the best gas tank because we know that Yaya really has a bad gas tank. But I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't see him winning no third round.
But I don't know. I don't know that Kang has a great gas tank either. Because he didn't really do anything in the Lou fight because he wasn't throwing any strikes. Why is he so tired? It's not good.
Yeah, I mean, for all the power we're talking about that Yaya throws with you, zero career knockdowns.
And that's fine. At the end of the day, it's about hurting somebody to try to get into the clinch, to try to get them on the ground for submissions. Or just have them thinking about the strikes too much so that they, you know, are distracted. Whatever it is. If Kang's idea is to lay and pray here, I don't like it. He's too good of a grappler. He's going to be too active off of his back. And I don't know that for 15 minutes, Kang, who, you know, is getting older still, you know, at 33, of course, Yaya is older at 36, but Kang has to make the trip from Korea to the United States. So this is like he's done well when he's come to the United States. He fought on the Cormier Miocic card beating Brandon Davis, but you know, these are just things that I certainly consider when trying to cap this. So I think it's a relatively pick'em fight. I do lean Yaya at plus money at all the different ways of looking at it, which would be sub or decision at plus 120, or even just, I guess, the finish at plus 200. So, you know, and again, the Yaya money line is plus 105, so that's never terrible. I came into this fight almost absolutely sure I was going to be on Kang because I loved how well-rounded he was and that he's got a good UFC record. Like he's a vet. Yeah. I don't know. Does he really have what it takes to put four in a row now across the 4 years?
I definitely understand, the sketchiness behind making a play here.
I
think that the layoff,
that's what I was about to say. The layoff. That's the thing. That's the only reason why. Again, like I can't pull the trigger on Yaya, and I reserve the right to totally flip the other way. Because, dude, these over-year layoffs, these guys are cashing, or girls with Misha Tate, but they are cashing. So that is a weird thing.
We're talking about a well-rounded fighter coming off of a long layoff where I know he's doing like the whole modeling thing and he's got a lot going on in his off time and stuff. Yeah, he's got like all these pictures and stuff out there. He's big time in Korea. Oh, so anyways, I mean, that's why, like, you know, he's not the guy that's been out there like,
dude, so you're telling me, but you're telling me that he might not be possibly fully invested in his training.
No, I think when he gets into the cage, he's ready to be there. He's not one of those guys that like is taking short notice fights because he needs to make an extra check is my thing.
Okay.
I think when he makes it to the cage, he's fully prepared to go in there.
That's an interesting.
That's my thing is like he enjoys, you know, fighting so much that even though he's, you know, successful otherwise, I mean, this is someone that has an extensive UFC record, 6-2 with one no contest. Yeah. So I see ultimately Kong either winning with some top control and grappling reversals, not allowing to be held down. Submission attempts are going to be difficult when you're giving up that much reach. Wrist control is much more difficult, as I've seen in the past, with big reach advantages and grappling. Kong seems like the type of guy that can ride it out in top control. And when the third round comes, if both guys are exhausted, then I don't see how they're pulling away at that point. But I think that the better wrestler and the better... the bigger fighter too is just it's going to be very helpful.
All right,
so that's why I feel confident. All right,
I'm pulling out the tinfoil. This is the bet. This is the bet. Are you ready?
Here we
go. The fight to be won by split or majority decision plus 400.
That's crazy.
That's it. It's going to be.
I mean,
it's good, dude. That's interesting. If they're laying on top, I'm telling you now, if Kang lays on top of him for another 10 minutes, you're going to see scorecards go crazy because Yaya is going to be more active off the ground. You're going to see some crazy shit happen.
Okay. All right. I like it. So we made it, huh?
We did.
It's a little bit of a shit show.
A little bit.
But we're at the main event, right? Uriah Hall versus Sean Strickland, the one that people have been asking for, right? The main event that people wanted.
Listen, these guys are two of the more absolutely quirky, peculiar, interesting personalities that the UFC could possibly have to offer. Sean Strickland is an absolute crazy man, maniac. Like, I don't know, he might even agree that he's like a redneck. Like, he's just like out there, man, doing his thing. And then Uriah Hall is just like that anime, polite, kind, respectful, but like really, like when he goes to his room by himself, like really dark and deep and like poetry and, you know what I mean? Like just like coloring, you know, drawing things. He's just, he's like a closet nerd. Like, I mean, probably not very closeted, but like just, again, two really particular, peculiar individuals.
And yeah, we see two extremely different styles here. I think on one end, you got the overwhelming advancing pressure for Strickland. On the other end, you got the wait, counter. Okay, all right, now I'm going to wait again. Like Uriah Hall is not looking to like get active in there. And I think this fight, you know, you're going to see Strickland marching down. You're going to see Hall going back, going for big counters, kicks. I don't feel comfortable like saying exactly how this fight plays out. I'll be real. I mean, I came in thinking there's no way Strickland loses this fight. He's got the volume, good striking defense, but it's like every time you watch him, he keeps his hands so fucking low. He parries well, but like he gets caught by that spinning kick against Dos Santos, and damn, Uriah Hall throws some fucking spinning kicks, and this is up at 185 now. So Hall's got a reach advantage. And, you know, as this fight goes on, the guy putting on the pressure, the pace, I don't feel comfortable saying that there's no chance that Hall ends up, you know, clipping him. Like, I think Strickland wins this fight so many times. I think the line is priced perfectly. I think that 7 out of 10, boom, Sean Strickland, he should win this fight that many times. But, like, minus 210, plus 175 for Hall. The only thing that I remain interested in this fight is a single prop play, because there's one person that has one specific method and basically no other way to win. Uriah Hall by knockout is plus 330. It's a small play. It's not a play of the day. It's not anything crazy. I'm sorry, it's the main event and that's all I got for you, but plus 330 for Uriah Hall to get a knockout. That's his 100% of the time win probability. Like, it is a knockout essentially in this fight. So How can you play money line when it's so juicy to at least, you know, double it up and do a plus 330 on the knockout?
You're right. That's, if you're on Uriah Hall, that is the only bet. And I wish I had more for this fight as well, because like I said, it's going to be extremely interesting. I cannot wait to watch it. It's just really tough. Like, cause like you said, I think the line is priced perfectly. It's priced around 68%. And I think that Strickland can win 7 out of 10 of these, 10 out of these fights. So that's why I am on Sean Strickland, because I think that the numbers are somewhat with us. I don't want to bet Uriah Hall. I don't want to sit there and wait. He's somebody that struggles week in and week out, probably day in and day out, like many Americans everywhere, with, you know, anxiety, depression, those types of demons. I don't know where he's at. He kind of, you know, is he really going to get a five fight win streak? They're both looking for a 5-fight win streak here. One of them's going to get it. And when you look at Hall's wins, the lucky win over Chris Weidman, the putting down of the old lion and Anderson Silva, a split decision win versus Shoeface, and a round three knockout versus Bevion Lewis, where, I mean, he's not even in the UFC anymore. Yeah, listen, and that being on the other side, you got Strickland, where two of his four wins, the guys aren't in the UFC, with Jack Marshman and Nurib Taleb. So, I think it just comes down to the fundamental problem, and shout out to MMA by the Numbers, who I believe posted it. It's just that when Hall is getting outstruck, his losses have come, like, specifically when he's been outstruck and outpaced like that. Paulo Costa knocked him out, outpaced him. Gegard Mousasi knocked him out, outpaced him. Derek Brunson knocked him out, outpaced him. And the Jocko fight, Jocko was on his way. He should have finished it, but the dude guessed. He threw 60 strikes in the first round. And on top of also, like, holding on to a butterfly guard up in the air. So he's holding on to him for dear life. He completely gasses out, and then Hall knocks him in the second. And we just watch Strickland dominate Jocko. Jocko, not even for a quarter of a second, looked like he had a chance in that fight.
Hmm.
I mean, Hall, I mean, and that's the other thing. Yeah, does Strickland keep his head up too much and maybe not his head straight up and not have great head movement? Yeah. But look at his stats, and they're not fluky like Kai Kamaka's. He has what could very well be considered to be elite striking defense. So you tell me the guy that throws at a ridiculously high pace, decently accurately, and has elite striking defense against a guy that doesn't throw, depends on a knockout, and has been shown that when he's put on a high pace, has folded and gets knocked out or doesn't win, I'm going to take Strickland. I think that the line is, like I said, I think the line is fair. So I'm on Strickland, and I'm looking for ways to make money, to, you know, to make it a plus money play. And I don't know. The feeling I'm getting is that we get a couple rounds in. I think that Strickland takes his time on some level, because I think that he'll respect Hall's one hitter quitter type of shot. So I think that I like Hall. I'm sorry. I like Strickland to win in the over 1.5 at -125, and Strickland to win in over 2.5 at +120. So I think one of, you know, parlayable or just, you know, I do. I think we get to the third round. I don't know that we get to the championship rounds, but I do. I think we get to the third.
I think we get to the fourth and fifth round.
So then, yeah, I like my over 2.5 then.
Yeah.
I don't like the over 3.5. That we're getting, you're getting crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, has Strickland ever been in a main event?
No.
I don't like him in the fourth and fifth round, man. That's where I get nervous about the knockout. He gives Hall all this information with his elite output. He puts out, what, 170 strikes probably in three rounds?
No, that's what I guess. I think he holds, like, up a little bit is what I think. I think that Strickland will have a decent game plan.
It's very tough.
Tarzan?
Syndicate?
Yes, Syndicate's a good
10th
team.
10th Planet.
That's a good team, yeah, man. He's going to have his shit with him. Listen, he's 30 years old. This is his time.
Yeah, I think Strickland easily wins the first three rounds. I start getting nervous if I see him foot come off the gas pedal and Hall starting to throw some shit as the fight goes on. So I think there's definitely a possibility that Hall gets a late knockout here. I am going to be playing Hall by knockout +330. And I might end up picking and circling Strickland still. Like, I want to make that very clear that this is a small bet. And it's a prop play for a reason. I don't really want to sweat a huge bet on this fight because I'm going to enjoy it so much. I really like Strickland as a fighter. And I do think that Hall possesses, you know, elite power. So I think either way it goes, you're watching two high-level guys. Like you said, higher ranked in the division. if you win, you get a top five, right? I'd love to see it. So I like the way that this is playing out, and I want to enjoy this fight. And while I do feel confident in Strickland as the side, I feel
what's best your KO prop, buddy?
+330
Oh, I got one better for you.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, and it plays okay. Way more into what you like. Uriah Hall 4-5 or decision, +420
+420 You're talking the chronic language now,
and nearly 100 points higher in value, and it plays into your narrative.
All right. Well,
I mean, obviously,
so listen, that's yeah. I mean, then you lose your if you get a knockout early, you're slapping yourself in the face. So,
but
I probably play both, $10 each, $20 on the main event. I could, that's not going to make or break my night. So, yeah, that sounds like a fun time.
Well, I'm glad I found that one for you or for anybody else who's still listening. So, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Hey, we made it this far. So, give you a quick rundown of some of our favorite plays on the card here, like we always try to do. You know, thanks for listening, guys. Hope you give us a like or subscribe or, you know, anything like that. But yeah, here we are. So, our dog of the day, we got Danny Chavez. I know it's really not a huge dog this week, but -105 to -115, that counts as a dog, my friends. And I think it should be reverse, if not even a wider line in Chavez's favor. So I'll be playing him there. I also like myself. I like Gloria DePaola on a small play. I like Uriah Hall on a knockout play. One of my favorite money line plays was Kyung Ho Kong at -125. We had the degenerate, the serious degenerate parlay. Brian Barberina's in there for whatever reason. We got it might be I'll throw Stolze in, and then you want to throw Yoder and Garcia. We might just play Yoder and Garcia separately as well. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, Trevin Jones also is an underdog, +130 That's it.
Yeah.
Carried away.
Those are all good. I guess I'll quickly do mine as well. I like very small, slight shot on Kosi in the over 1.5 or the round 3 decision prop for him. I do like him as to get it done. I like the Lawrence Jones fight to go the distance at +100 I do think Lawrence gets it done. Yoder and over 1.5 I think that's a fairly good parlay piece almost anywhere at -125 So you don't have to necessarily take my parlays. I think that that's a really good piece at -125 I mean, you can parlay that to something really chalky and still get plus money because it's -125 So I'm going to parlay that to Chavez and over 1.5 at, what was that, +120 or something like that. I also like Chavez money line at +100 I also wanted to parlay Garcia and Stolze at +100 Maybe a little shot on Anglin. Same thought as the Kosi fight. Maybe the round 3 or decision prop. Passing on the Nico fight with Wu. Really passing on the Brian Barberena and Witt fight. Adeshev, money line. Nearly dog of the week for me anyway. But I do like Chavez a little bit more. Like we said about Stolze and Garcia parlay, gonna pass on the Baez fight. Reserve my right to change with Yaya and Kang, but I guess I'm on Yaya at the moment. I almost think I like that fight to go the distance. And Strickland in the over 1.5 over 2.5 I think Strickland can get it done.
Sounds good to me. I mean, thanks everybody for making it this far. And hey, Guru, how would you take us away?
Thank you so much for listening to Chronic Combat Conversations. Please make sure you follow us on Twitter at Chronic Combat, on Instagram at Chronic Combat Conversations. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and give our videos a like and a few comments out there, maybe even share them to your friends. Look for us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, really wherever you listen to podcasts. And make sure you subscribe so you get the episodes as soon as they drop. While you're listening,
liking and subscribing. Make sure to give us a 5-star rating as well, and even some feedback. And never stop sharing it with your friends. Feel free to follow my awesome co-host, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And you can find me, Guru Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. Thank you all so much for listening. And you'll see us next week with a special guest for UFC 265, Lewis versus Gone.